particular reason, just because I had it already prepared a while ago, and I just thought we'd do it now, is the topic of bat mitzvahs. And it's worth, I'll mention this already as a preface, is that we've seen some tshuvos from Moshe that are very popular, tshuvos that we really like. And we've seen not so many tshuvos that we don't like. So I'm going to tell you straight out, if you're like a monorthodox Jew, you're not going to like this tshuvos. You're just not going to like them. I'm going to tell you straight out, but I do think nonetheless, I'm still teaching them, because it's worthwhile, I think, just to read through. I think it's still an interesting perspective, even if we disagree at the end of the day, practically what we do. I still think Rav Moshe's perspective is worthwhile. It's worthwhile considering. And I think at the end, and I'll mention, I'm explaining what I mean by that, not to get rid of bat mitzvahs, but I also think that, it's worth noting that we don't always agree with Rav Moshe in every position. So
Art cancel culture. We don't have to agree with something else.
we do not have to agree with everything Rav Moshe says either. Yeah, that's true. Rav Moshe was clearly outvoted with time. And I think Lincoln Square has like a rich heritage of being one of the first places, or the first place that really has bat mitzvahs. I know like Ilana Kagan had her bat mitzvah here,
Was
like
the first one ever.
the first one ever here. Okay, so Ilana Kagan had it. So we have some quite some yichus here. Okay, so here's some tshuva. So the first tshuva is from 1957. Rav Moshe writes as follows. Shoot, I don't know why I have the date. Yeah, I can put it out. Okay, so it writes as follows. This is an Or HaChaim, Chelek Aleph, Siman Kuf Dalet. B'davar inyan ha-chafetzim lehanig eze seder v'simcha b'vnot k'nshnasu b'vnot mitzvah. With regard to the arrangement of things to have this happiness, this type of celebration for a woman, for a young woman, when they become b'vnot mitzvah, when they turn 12. Hine ein la'asod zeh b'beit ha-knesset. Behold, they should not do this in a synagogue. B'shum ofen af lo b'layla. They should definitely at no point ever do some type of celebration in a synagogue, even at night, even when, the synagogue is closed, even when there's no minyan happening. Never have it in a shul. Ki bebeit knesset einu makom lasot dvar shut af benivnu al tanai. Because a shul is not a place where you can do stuff, even things which are only divrei reshut, even things which are only things which are permit are not prohibited. They're only things which are they very shoot things which are allowed, but they're not required. So, like having a party, or having some type of like simcha, I think that you can have, if it's not a simcha shel mitzvah, it's not some type of like mitzvah performance, you wouldn't be allowed to have it. So, you wouldn't be able to have, for instance, in a shul. Shul, by the way, here does not mean like the ballroom. It means like the actual sanctuary. That's what he means by shul. There's no problem with this thing. There's no, I mean, there's the issue to the building as a whole, but he's not talking. But there's no problem with using like a multi-purpose room or like the lobby or something of that sort. He's talking about the sanctuary itself, and he's saying the sanctuary itself, you're not allowed to just do divrei reshut. So like, you can't bring in like a comedian to just start like, having like a night of comedy in the synagogue. That's just not something you should do. It's not proper thing to do in a synagogue itself.
Would you say it would not be proper to have like a chazen concert on a Saturday night in a shul? Because we've had those.
Presumably, depending on how much you classified it as like a dvar mitzvah, if it's like
It was just to raise money for the shul and have people have a good time.
Well, if it's like a Jewish, like it brings you to like rock, it's probably defensible as like some type of like spiritual event. I don't know. I don't know how far of motion takes this consistently. You'd have to look at his other writings. I'm not sure how far he takes it, but he certainly thinks, at the very least, that bat mitzvot are not worthy of being in synagogues. And he says as follows: Veha ceremony tekes shel bat mitzvah hu vaday rak divrei reshut vehevel ba'alma. The ceremony for a bat mitzvah, this is like the strongest thing you're going to find in Moshe, is only a divrei reshut, and it's not only like something which is only permissible. It's not something that's required in any sense, but it's hevel ba'alma. It's like emptiness, right? It's like havel havalim kohelet. It's just emptiness. It's vanity. It's purposeless. The inshum makom la'tir lasod bebikness, and therefore it's completely forbidden to say this in a synagogue. The kol shekein bazeh shemekor ba me'am reformer that conservator from the reform movement and the conservative movement. He thinks that's definitely problematic. He's worried, the influence of the conservative and the reform movement, that's also going to be problematic. That's going to be, the motives are problematic, and therefore the issue itself is bad. We're going to come back to the motives, why Rav Moshe is prohibiting this in a second. The table that, keep, I guess, keep the reform and the conservative movement comment in your back of your head for a second. If the father, interesting, he has father here, not the parents, I guess presumably the father is the head of the household, and that he's referring to, but presumably he's talking about parents in general. If the parents want to make some type of simcha in their house, the rashai, they're permitted to do so. But it's worth noting that it won't be considered a student's mitzvah. There's no way it's going to be considered to be anything to do with a mitzvah. You wouldn't be able to use it, you know, to as a way of eating meat during the 9 days. You know, that it wouldn't count. It wouldn't qualify for that. It's no better than a glorified birthday party. If I had my ways, I would get rid of also the bar mitzvahs. Even bar mitzvah they get rid of as well. Because it's well known that bar mitzvahs do not bring a single person ever to being closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, being closer to Torah. His argument is, and this, I'm sure it's a partially sociological argument for the time. I'm not sure how much it's changed. I can't speak to that. But certainly, at least in the time, in the 50s, or Moshe's contention is that bar mitzvahs and, I guess, kav v'chomer, or at least as worse, bat mitzvahs, do not encourage performance of mitzvot. In no way do they actually, you know, bring the child any closer to God, to Judaism, to religion. They do none of that. It's just a glorified a birthday party. It's a hedonistic thing that people do. Doesn't actually serve any purpose. If anything, to the contrary, many times it actually brings you to do many forbidden things. It brings you sometimes people are mechal Shabbat, some type of a desecration of Shabbos. He doesn't mention it, but I'm sure, I think in other places he mentioned potentially there's mixed dancing, potentially, you know, all sorts of potential issues that come up in these parties, and they're not worthwhile in any sense. He says, when it comes to a bar mitzvah, because it comes from, it already is well established, that's A, and B, because it comes from mikor mitzvah, because the source of it is from the source of a mitzvah, therefore it is hard to get rid of it, hard to erase it. But two, establish it with regard to daughters, to the woman, young woman, when it has no mitzvah source to it, no, you know, rudimentary basis. Even in the house, it's probably better not to have at all. You shouldn't even have a party in the house. But to have it in the shul, it's definitely forbidden. It sounds like for Rav Moshe, this is something I read somewhere else. Somebody suggested it could be that Rav Moshe actually even would take a stronger position and believe, at least this particular paragraph, it sounds like he's taking such a strong position. Maybe Rav Moshe even thinks he really should prohibit in the house, not just like I discourage it, but I actually think it's prohibited. It could just be that Rav Moshe feels that there's limitations to how far he can actually paskin. As in, at some point, you have to realize not everyone's going to listen to you anyways. I mean, we know already that Rav Moshe's statement about bar mitzvahs in shuls is not something that's followed, but he may have felt that, you know, kal v'chomer, he's never going to be listened to in a home. And so he didn't really extend his prohibition to the home because he knew like no one was going to listen. Why go out of your way to say something that no one's going to listen? You just make yourself irrelevant. And so I read that somewhere, that the contention that Mayor Moshe actually felt that even in the home, it really was forbidden. Why it was forbidden, we'll get that in a second. But certainly Rav Moshe has this contention that he keeps talking about, that bar mitzvahs are no more than glorified birthday parties and therefore are prohibited. I'm well aware that there's something clearly problematic. Why bar mitzvah? Bat mitzvahs? No, bar mitzvahs, yes. That seems to be the current that keeps running through. So we're going to get that at the end. I promise we're going to get that. I'm not tabling it forever. That's probably the main issue we have to talk about for Moshe. Any other questions besides that? I know I'm like leaving off the main point here. Okay, so let's get there in a second. So let's keep reading some other chuvos he has, and that kind of repeats some of the same points. Get a little other points in, and we'll really get into the meat and bones of this discussion. So Rav Moshe in the later tshuva, 1961, I think I skipped a little bit, just to point out that he reformulated the same tshuva a little bit later, and he kept consistent. This is in Chelek Bet, Nevor Chaim, Simen Lamed, where he writes again the same exact thing, V'studat simcha shasin lebat mitzvah, when it comes to the party, that's the happiness, the festive meal that's done for a bat mitzvah, Kvar katafti b'sifri al orchaim ein b'zeh shum shaychul de mitzvah v'hi suda v'simchat reshut k'simchat shalom uledet v'alma b'in lasot v'bei kneset. I already wrote above that it's just like a big birthday party. As Rav Moshe, even a few years later, was consistent, he still felt that it was no more than a birthday party. Okay, let's go on to another tshuva where he talked about this again. There's a few tshuvas. You can imagine that, you know, in the late 50s, early 60s, I actually don't know when Ilana Kagan's Bat Mitzvah was. Anybody know the year?
I would have known.
You can probably Google how old she is, just figure it out from there. But I'm sure it's probably around now. I mean, if she's quick second. Let me just look up how old she is. She's the Supreme Court Justice. So she lived on the Upper West Side, I think. And so she's 61. So she was born in 1960. 72 would have been her Bat Mitzvah. So it's actually a little bit earlier than this. So actually, he's already talking before Ilana Kagan, almost 10 years beforehand. Okay. So in an earlier tshuva, 1959, he writes as follows. Chagigat Bat Mitzvah Beit HaKnesset, another tshuva about the Bat Mitzvah in the synagogue. He says as follows, B'davar etzem chagigat Bat HaMitzvah, ein bazeh inyan sudat mitzvah, elo kisimcha shalom uledet ba'alma, she will reshut, but he repeats the same theme he has over and over again, that it is no more than a birthday party, v'lachein ein lasot Beit HaKnesset, and therefore you shouldn't do it in a shul, shuzat reshut ein latir Beit HaKnesset, af kishniv na'al tanai, even if the synagogue is built in such a way where you built it originally, under the condition that you could use it as a multi-purpose room where you'd be able to use the synagogue space for other things than just prayer. Nonetheless, Ramosha's contention is that you cannot use the synagogue space for dither and shoot. You cannot use it for non-mitzvah-related purposes. Aval lasot kiddush b'beit ha-knesset, but to make a kiddush in the synagogue, sheno agim b'ro b'te knesset d'medina zu lasot b'chol simcha she'esh le'adam, lo gara simcha zu mishar simcha she'osim. He said, at the end of the day, if you want to make a kiddush, then having a kiddush is no different than any other simcha you can make. You can make a kiddush about anything. You know, you want to celebrate that I got a job promotion, you can make a kiddush about that. And so Moshe was like, well, Bat Mitzvah is no worse than that, right? So even if it's just a glorified birthday party, it's still something happy. At the end of the day, even if he thinks there's no halachic significance, Moshe is willing to contend that there is something, you know, naturally, we want to celebrate people's happiness. There's something very nice about, you know, celebrating it. And there's nothing wrong with it. Maybe you won't let it in the synagogue setting to like have the whole speech, which you'll mention in a second, but that might be for ulterior purposes. But in terms of just celebrating someone's happiness, you know, just being happy because they're happy, then that's okay. I think there's no difference between, you know, anything else. And we saw a similar type of argument already. We talked about the, no, I'll take it back. Take it back. Never mind. At this Kiddush, the Bat Mitzvah girl, right, so a young woman, is allowed to say some words of Torah or some words relating to her simcha. And this sounds, here he makes mention to the fact that sounds like the questioner. It's not clear. The question here is Rav Beharvard, New York. Howard Beach, New York. So somebody in Howard Beach was given the tshuva. It's not clear, I guess Meir Gana was the rabbi in Howard Beach in New York at the time, had asked them this question. And it sounds pretty clear from like the general tshuva, we'll get a little bit more of it, that this rabbi clearly wanted to, or Moshe to permit it. If anything, he was really arguing for all the benefits of Bat Mitzvahs, I mean, any benefits that we'd be able to argue about that Bat Mitzvahs, you know, at the end of the day, despite the fact that there are 12-year-old girls who, you know, as any young child are full of silliness, and there are a lot of silly things that happen at bar and bat mitzvahs, that for sure is true. But at the end of the day, like I think modern people, we would argue that there are plenty of benefits to bat mitzvahs. At the end of the day, it does connect you to Torah, it connects you to Judaism, it connects you many ways. Often people do like real meaningful projects, Torah learning projects, chesed projects. There's a lot of good reasons and good things about bar and bat mitzvahs. I don't have to spell out. I think we all know what they are. Rav Moshe clearly didn't feel that way, or maybe that wasn't true of the sociological reality at the time. But Rav Moshe says here, at least, that he thinks. Either way, it's clear that the person asking the question, this Rabbi Meir Kahana from Howard Beach, he clearly was pushing Rav Moshe on this issue and was trying to suggest that there was value in giving these speeches in this Bar Mitzvah girl sharing Torah. And so Rav Moshe concedes that he thinks that there is value for the Bris girl speaking, but she shouldn't speak from the Bima. Right? She definitely should not speak from any part of the synagogue that has, like, a synagogue function to it. That's where Moshe's contention. Rather, it only should be near the table where the Kiddush is. Right? So in the ballroom, if you will, in Lincoln Square. That's where the Bar Mitzvah girl should speak. And he continues going on the same point. What about Bar Mitzvahs? What about the fact that Bar Mitzvahs have already been popularized? Right? So I guess in 1959, whatever this, I guess in the sociological reality in Howard Beach, was that Bar Mitzvahs were already happening. And so Moshe is kind of contending with the fact that, you know, it's hard to stop something that's already happening. How do you, you know, what do you do now? So, Im Yachol Kvot Rato Be'ofen Shelo Yezilut Ale Kvot Rato, V'gam Shelo Yemach Loket Lishanot, Shiei Rak V'Siyat Kiddush Yer Lishanot. He says, he admits that if it's possible, right now, if the tradition in the shul had been until now, that Bar Mitzvah girls speak from the Bima, and in some way, the rabbi is able to, you know, massage the issue or change it without people realizing, without making a big fuss in the shul politics, able to just quickly and quietly change it, as Bar Mitzvah girl, instead of speaking in the shul, speaks instead at the Kiddush, that's what he recommends, that's what Moshe certainly thinks is appropriate. But, im efshar liot mizeh machloket o ziluta, if it's possible, and it's worth noting that Moshe is saying not that it definitely will happen, but even the possibility of argument, possibility of some type of disgrace or some type of, you know, embarrassment to Torah and to the rabbi. So al shechozer bo yaniach kamoshe uva, right? If the rabbi now reverses, you know, his previous edict, previously the rabbi had seemingly permitted you to give a bat mitzvah speech from the bima. Now the rabbi, after he hears from Moshe, if he ends up changing and reversing course and prohibiting it, so it's going to be pretty embarrassing. It's going to be, you know, bad for Torah. It's going to look very bad. So in such a situation, you know, I could put words in Moshe's mouth and say, like, everyone's going to argue that Judaism is so backwards and it's against, you know, feminist movements. It's all these different things. You know, you could put words into what people would argue against the rabbi. So you think in that situation, then there's more room to, you know, allow the existing practice. He says, it will be permitted in that case to keep it with the existing practice, but it should be done in conjunction with the Kiddush. It shouldn't be in its own practice. You shouldn't just have a bat mitzvah on its own. You should keep it in conjunction with a Kiddush, right? Just have the Kiddush, you know, preempted, so to speak, by the speech. That's the Moshe's intention. V'atoelet, now Rav Moshe finally deals with a little bit with what about the positive bat mitzvahs, you know, connecting to Torah. They have chesed projects. They have all these positive things that bar mitzvahs do. He says, at the reverse, it actually appears that any possible gains you might make, if anything, they're nullified, it's much worse, because there are actually many negative things that happen from bat mitzvahs, because there are plenty of desecration of Shabbos that happens at bat mitzvahs. And as you mentioned earlier in the previous tshuva, even when it comes to boys, the bar mitzvahs, we see no purpose, no need. It doesn't do anything possibly beneficial in terms of approaching a son to Torah and mitzvot. Even if there is a woman, a young woman, who is an exception, right? Let's say you have, I don't know, well, I guess, Ilana, I don't know if Ilana Kagan is so religious at this point, but... Let's say there is a woman, you know that having her bar mitzvah is going to be very meaningful. She's a very religious, very spiritual woman who, you know, let's say she goes to Minyan every day, even, let's say whatever she does, that 12-year-old girl could do, that clearly demonstrates that she is a religiously inspired woman. And a bar mitzvah would further that project. Bar mitzvah will not be full of emptiness or, you know, full of games and stupidity, but will be full of, you know, Torah and meaning and values. And nonetheless, he says, he says, at the end of the day, when it comes to Ruba the Ruba, most women, because majority of 12-year-old girls and 13-year-old boys, and the way I guess that sociologically bar and bat mitzvahs are done, because the large majority is going to be negative, even the exceptional cases should be prohibited. Right, it's kind of like a low plug. It's general, you know, we're going to prohibit every case because they're all, most of them are problematic, majority are problematic, and therefore, even if there are a few that are good, it's still problematic. ולכן יש לרחק עניין החדש לחגיגת בר מצווה, ולא לקרב, אבל לא במחלוקת כדאל, and therefore, the rabbi should do, and this is kind of the, this is the place where Moshe kind of moves away from the strict halacha and kind of tells the rabbi kind of the advice of what he should do, the general direction, and he's saying that generally, this rabbi should try pushing as much as possible against bar mitzvahs in a way that's politically sound, in a way that, you know, preserves his job, that doesn't, you know, create a big ruckus in the shul. But if that's what he can do, if he has the means of, you know, subtly discouraging bar mitzvahs, that's what he should do, that's what he should discourage. And we saw earlier, seemingly, that Rav Moshe thinks he should discourage it, not only in the synagogue, but even in the home, he should be really discouraged. Bar mitzvahs don't really do anything, they're just big birthday parties. Great. Any questions or comments so far? Yeah. I don't know. It's not totally clear. For Moshe, at least here, how far you go from Machlokes. I mean, at the end of the day, Moshe is not allowing too much, right? He's just allowing the girl to speak. I mean, he's kind of, first of all, he's already acknowledging that there's already this practice exists now, and he's acknowledging that, you know, if you reverse course, then it'd be really really embarrassing. But you're right. It's not clear for Moshe how far you take that. You know. How egregious does something have to be before you're willing to allow Zivuta to be Rabbanan? This embarrassment is still worth it because it's just so egregious a problem. Here, it's not clear it's so egregious. What? Yeah. I mean, here it's not so much about the people doing something wrong. Here it's actually about the kavod of the rabbi, really the Torah as a whole, that if, you know, the rabbi reverses course all of a sudden, then A, you know, it's always hard to change things, you know, as every Republican who's every fiscal conservative hawk, you know, every fiscal conservative knows you can't like repeal, you know, the social benefits that you gave to the people. It's impossible to take things back. So you can't, you know, it's hard to, once you give something to the people, you can't really take it back. But I think, yeah, so I think at the end of the day, like there's a line probably at some point where, you know, if the rabbi says, you know, I don't know, you know, non-Jews can come and pray, you know, and lean from the Torah, I assume Rav Moshe would say like, that's not going to work. You're going to have to like, you made a mistake. You're going to have to like reverse what you said.
It could be the difference is that this isn't really a halachic issue at the bottom. He thinks that it's not usher per se to have these. It's also because it has bad elements that follow along with it. So that's why he's allowing them to do it when they already have it to avoid locus. But if it actually violated halacha plainly in all circumstances, like have goyim laying or being choirs like they have in non-Orthodox shuls or whatever, then he would draw a line. So to me, he's like, never says this is also because it violates halacha. He says it's also because bad things happen as a result. Right.
Yeah. I mean, actually, let's get to the reasoning right now. Let's get to that right now. Because let's get to the next two. But let's come back to this question. That's really the one question that really deals with this entire issue. Why is Rav Moshe so insistent that bat mitzvahs are problematic? Let's get to that. Yeah, Bella, do you have a comment first? Right. Yeah, no, it's true. So, you know, it definitely is true when it comes to that. When it comes to certain things, their emotion is willing to make exceptions. In general, you know, if we could definitely talk for a while about Rav Moshe and well, the feminist movement. He has a lot of tshuvas about, you know, anything to do with the feminist movement. You know, Torah learning, synagogue practices. You know, the whole gamut. So it's definitely what to talk about. Certainly, when it comes to this issue, why don't we just get straight into the issue? Let's just get right there. So let me read the next tshuva, and we'll come back. We'll talk about all these things we've talked until now. We'll get into it. We'll get into all the details. Okay. So Rav Moshe has the following tshuva in 1969, and here's where it kind of spells out a little bit more clearly some of the issues that the friendship between a bar mitzvah and a bat mitzvah. And he says as follows: seemingly he's commenting. I'm not sure who's the one. If I make a critique of Rav Moshe's tshuvas, is we never know who's. We don't know who, what the questioner had ever asked. We always only know where Moshe's response is. Right? Sometimes you look at old tshuvas, not so many modern tshuvas, but especially older tshuvas, you can often find, you know, you look at the tshuva of like the Rashba. So you'll find, or you know, find sometimes some very long like questions, because there's like a whole explanation of like the whole questioner, who's often Talmidei Chachamim, who are giving a full explanation of what they think the argument is, you know, pro or con. And then afterwards, the Rashba will go on and say, like, I agree with this argument, I disagree with that point. You know, they'll give their comment on that argument. And Rav Moshe doesn't do that. He only comments on, you know, he only brings his comments. And not only does he only bring his comments, but often his comments, you know, within the comment, he seemingly refers to something that the person who asked, the questioner, has mentioned. But we're actually kind of left in the blank and in the dark as to what, you know, that comment had been. So it's certainly, I for me, at least as a reader, I'm always like struggling. I'm trying to figure out like what exactly this person has been trying to argue that Rav Moshe is disagreeing with. So it's certainly a critique of Rav Moshe, you know, in terms of, I'm sure there's reasons for it, that why he organized it this way. But clearly from this tshuva, it seems that there was someone had responded to Rav Moshe and had argued that he still thinks bar mitzvahs should be permissible. Right, and yeah, I can take a guess of the hundreds of rabbis who think bar mitzvah should be permissible, who could have responded. So someone could have responded and said he thinks that bar mitzvah should be permissible. So now Rav Moshe is going to respond. This is 2 years later after his first tshuva came out from 1957. He said in 1959, he says as follows: the questioner had asked, why is there any difference between a bat mitzvah and a bar mitzvah? At the end of the day, it sounds like there really should be no difference. Give me a quick second. Sorry, there's someone who's trying to get in. Okay, sorry about that. He said at the end of the day, why should there be any difference between a bar and bat mitzvah? Bar and bat mitzvahs really should be the same, right? If you're going to allow bar mitzvahs, which clearly was a sociological practice, though we saw Rav Moshe did not like that practice. He thought it was a big birthday party. Though Rav Moshe doesn't go out of his way to, you know, discourage them. And we can talk about in a second why not. Maybe Rav Moshe thinks that bar mitzvahs should be the exact equivalent to bat mitzvahs, except that bar mitzvahs, you know, already exist. Kind of like the previous tshuva we read about the bat mitzvah in the synagogue in Howard Beach. So maybe, you know, maybe Rav Moshe thinks they're similar, but it sounds like Rav Moshe wants to argue that actually bar mitzvahs have more value than bat mitzvahs. And that's seemingly the implication from 1957's tshuva. It sounds like it's certainly what he's going to argue here. So we're going to have to explore why not. What's the difference? So he says as follows. V'yesh lo sif, and the guy's questioning further, the chazeg akushya, she'af she'ein abat the reshet, that he says as follows. I'm going to keep. He says, even if the woman, the girl, the bat mitzvah girl, does not give a shir, does not give like a Torah talk, and Rav Moshe makes an aside, or it's actually not clear whose aside is this. Is this the questioner or is this Rav Moshe's? But the aside is that there's no value to the woman's drasha because she is exempt from Talmud Torah, which is a rather astounding comment. I'm actually not sure what to do with that even, because even if you're putter from Talmud Torah, it still is Talmud Torah. It still is a positive value, even if you're a putter from it. So it's a rather an astounding comment. I'm not even sure what to do with that. So I'm gonna kind of table it, because I'm just not trying to comment on that. Nonetheless, even if there's no, it's not as much value, I guess, as maybe a boy doing it, Mikol Makom, ha-biyom shenaseh bar mitzvah nechshevet sudas mitzvah. At the end of the day, when it comes to a bar mitzvah, and therefore likewise by bat mitzvah, the day that you do the bat mitzvah is considered to be a sudas mitzvah. It's considered to be a festive meal. It's considered to be a mitzvah meal. Afkash eno doresh, even if you have no Torah, even if the bar mitzvah boy doesn't have any Torah, and the truth is, you know, most bar mitzvah boys, there's not too much Torah in their speeches, but even if the bar mitzvah boy has, has no speech, nonetheless, it's still considered to be a sudas mitzvah. It's still defined as a holiday, as a festive mitzvah meal. Gita b'magen Yevram, as the Magen Yevram quotes, obidagam ravava, ta-ta-ta, v'shem marshal, v'yam shal shlomo, v'im kein, gam bebat, v'oto ayom, shemalu la yud bet shan, v'yam echad, yitchashev, sudas mitzvah, v'ein lomar, ein achanami, kevin de l'huskar zeh b'shum makom. So it should be the same thing by a daughter. So Rav Moshe says, no, that's not true. He says, you can't say that, first of all, because there's no source for this. There are sources for bar mitzvahs, there are no sources for bat mitzvah. Right? That's Moshe's first contention, seemingly, that there's just no source, there's no precedent to this. And then he says, as follows, he kind of tries proving this a little further. He says, with regard to the bracha that the father says after his son gets his first aliyah, so the bracha, that there's some debate as to what exactly the bracha is for, why you do so. So the prima gadim asked the question, why doesn't the father or the mother make the similar bracha when it comes to a daughter? Right? Why don't we make the same bracha of Baruch Shebetrani when a daughter reaches the age of 12? V'lo ikshal mash inosim suda. So Rav Moshe makes the following comment that the prima gadim would ask that question, and he gives whatever answer he gives. He only had asked it with regard to the bracha, but he makes no mention about the sudat mitzvah. The fact that he doesn't ask the question about why we don't have a festive meal for daughters, af shetama suda katav, mishum degal mitzvah ve'ose b'chinu mach ve'shekel, shetam ze hayesh degam bepat v'yichus ve'gedola. There's a good reason to have a meal, right? Once you become a bat mitzvah or bar mitzvah, there's a very good reason to have a meal. The reason to have a meal is because there's a statement in the Gemara that Rabbi Yosef says in the Kiddushin, the following statement. He says, and it's on the sheet, Rabbi Yosef has the following statement. Rabbi Yosef was this very famous Tana who was blind. Sorry, Amora, who was blind. And he was a very wise sage. He became blind at a later age. And he makes the following comment. He says, if only we paskined that blind people were mechuyav in all mitzvot, we were obligated in all mitzvot, then I would make a Yom HaTov L'Rabbana, I'd make this very large festive meal. Why would I make this large festive meal? Because being obligated in mitzvot is a good enough reason, or very good reason, to create a festive meal, right? That reaching that stage in life where you're now obligated in commandments, that's a very good reason to celebrate. And so on that basis, everyone says you should therefore have a sudat mitzvah for a bar mitzvah. And so Moshe is pointing out, no one seems to claim you should have a sudat mitzvah for a bat mitzvah. Why not? That should have been a very good thing that should point out historically, and yet that never was pointed out. I might add my own aside, that part of the reason there might not have been a question might be because a sudat bat mitzvah, a meal, a festive meal, is more of a sociological phenomenon than like a bracha. A bracha is going to be something that, you know, the rabbis can certainly legislate much more. Whether or not parents are going to pay to have a festive meal for their children, that's something that, you know, the rabbis can say from today till tomorrow. At the end of the day, you know, it's going to happen or not happen, you know, because of certain sociological effects that rabbis certainly have some power in, but not that much. And so it could have been historically the reason it never came up, but just because sociologically that's just not the place we were. Women just didn't have the same stature in society that men had for centuries. You know, so I don't know if Moshe's argument is the strongest argument, but that's certainly his claim that we have no source for this. There's never been such a custom to have a sudat mitzvah for a girl. That's claim number one. He moves on. Claim number two. V'anachon le'aniyut da'iti. I want to add, why is it my opinion that there should be no sudat mitzvah for a girl? Mishum de'ein nikar achiluk bebas ma'aseh b'ma shenasi gedola yoter mikatnuta. V'lo dami leben shenikar tuva shem'ata misarfin oto lechol davar shebayi minyan asara u'minyan shlosha. He says, what is the main difference between a bar mitzvah and a bat mitzvah? Both the boy and the girl who reach the gil mitzvot, the age of mitzvot, they have this change in stature. They now reach a point of obligation of mitzvot. But the difference is that when it comes to a boy, the boy's ability to participate in communal function is clear. The fact that now the boy became, you know, a man, you know, I always find it funny calling a 13-year-old boy a man, but the fact that now he's considered, he has the halachic status where he's able to participate in public functions, that is a clear public change. As opposed to a 12-year-old girl, where though she's now obligated to commandments, there is no difference in terms of how she acts publicly. How she acts publicly is going to remain the same, both pre-bat mitzvah and post-bat mitzvah, and that very change, whether or not your behavior changes and your ability to, you know, participate in the communal functions changes with your age, that Rav Moshe says is the key distinction and the key reason for why a bat mitzvah should not have like a whole party behind it. Yeah, that's exactly what he's talking about. Yeah. He's saying a boy bar mitzvah can be able to participate in a minyan, he could be part of a minyan, he could lead, you know, anything to do with minyanim, any difference of kedusha. He mentioned also minyan shlosha, so anything to do with a zimun, a boy could do also. I'm not sure what, if you're already wondering, I'm not totally sure what Moshe thinks about mizumenet, about women zimuns. I'm not sure what his opinion on it is. I mean, I know it's a halacha and shulchan aruch. I'm not sure why that's so different. I guess it's not so common. It's not as public, maybe. Maybe that's why he doesn't include it as something different. But regardless, he thinks that the public nature of the change of a bar mitzvah is worthy of a suda, and the private nature of the change of a bat mitzvah means it should not be a suda. But it is true. I think to be fair to Moshe, it is true that for, I mean, let's take out like the more like, you know, liberal bat mitzvahs that we might have more nowadays, forgetting those. The average bar mitzvah, and, you know, typical young Israel, the average bar mitzvah boy does something in the synagogue. It's clear what he does. You know, maybe he'll lean, maybe he'll get an aliyah, maybe he'll do haftorah, whatever it is, he'll do something. The average bar mitzvah girl, let's say the average young Israel, doesn't do any of those things, right? They may give a speech, but there's no actual communal function that they will actually participate in. And so Moshe's argument is, yes, it's true that maybe, you know, later on in life, you know, the average bar mitzvah boy might not keep going to minyan, but the very fact that the bar mitzvah itself is celebrated in that way, you know, is a clear communal change, is a clear public demonstration of his arrival to gil mitzvot, something that doesn't happen for a woman. That's Rav Moshe's contention. He says he concedes that obviously it's the same actual happiness. Of course, you know, the parents are just as happy when their girl becomes a bar mitzvah as their boy becomes a bar mitzvah. The kid himself is just as happy, you know, the herself is just as happy as the boy is happy. So obviously the same happiness is true, but because the happiness itself is private and not shared in the communal sense, that's why it doesn't have this communal meal that comes along with it. That's the motion of contention. Umashi Amar Rabbi Yosef, what about that statement Rabbi Yosef mentioned that I mentioned earlier? Rabbi Yosef was the blind man who had mentioned this thing about Yom HaTov HaRabbana. He would make this festive meal if he found out that he really was chayv in mitzvot. Hua Mekor Lasot Tzuvah Bar Mitzvah, that is the source for making this meal for Bar Mitzvahs. Sarach Lomar Degamkin Hu Nikar. He has to argue that that case would have been obvious, that Rav Yosef making the celebration or becoming chayv mitzvah would have been very clear. This is true, even if, especially if we say that a blind person, if they're obligated in the commandments, will be able to participate in minyanim. That would for sure be true, because then he'd be able to have an aliyah and do, you know, everything else that everyone else does, you know, every other bar mitzvah boy. Even if you say that a blind person, even before this change, a blind person generally is able to be part of a minyan, Nami Badam Gadol, Kirav Yosef, Nikar, Mishim Shimitzad, Gidiloto, Notim Levarach, Osi Achirim. When it comes to this particular case, even if there's no actual change, right, because Rav Yosef beforehand when he was blind, he was able to participate in the minyan, and even now that, you know, halacha changed, that's the context, that the halacha might have changed, and maybe a blind person is more part of mitzvot, so he'd still be part of the same thing, nothing would have actually changed, but because the particular individual involved, Rav Yosef, was this very large Amora, very famous Amora, very well-respected scholar, so it'd be very obvious to everyone that this big scholar, something has happened to him, right? Even if, you know, he was able to function beforehand in public spaces, you know, in the Minyanim, now something clearly would have changed, and therefore there would have been a valid reason to have this Sudat Mitzvah on his behalf. Right. Ayin Mipsachim, Daf Kuf Tetzayin, Demashar Yosef, Hotzi B'nei Veitu, Amir Tagarta B'Lel Pesach. So you can see from a Gemara in Pesachim, Ari Pesachim, that Rabbi Yosef would lead his household in the leading of the Haggadah. He was like a well-known person. He was a well-known person who did a lot of things. And therefore, it was something that was relevant to make a Sudat Mitzvah for. But in a situation like a bat mitzvah in which there's no clear change that's happened between her status like yesterday and her status today, then you are allowed to have a bat mitzvah, and there is no then you wouldn't be able to have a sudat mitzvah. You wouldn't be able to do so. Right. Before we get to analyzing Rav Moshe's, you know, discussion as a whole, just a side point here, which is, where does Rav Moshe get this? Where does Rav Moshe get this contention that it makes such a big difference whether or not there's a public change? Right? Where does that come from? Because it's not the most well-founded argument Rav Moshe makes, but it is potentially, you can kind of see a little bit within the, I quoted two sources, we don't have to read both of them. Take a look, for instance, at the Magen Avraham, it's the second one, the bottom of the page, where the Magen Avraham quotes the following idea. He says, "Haynu k'shanase ben yun gimel yom echad," when a boy becomes 13 years old, "ve'achshav nagu levarach b'shach shanar mitpalel or kor b'shabbat rishona," we have the minhag nowadays that the father will make the bracha of baruch shepetrani at the time where the boy first does his public act of mitzvot, when he davens for the amud, or when he lanes for the first time, or nowadays our version is when he gets an aliyah, "she'az noda l'rabim shehu bar mitzvah," because at that moment it is clear to everyone that the boy is a bar mitzvah. So there is like some source, and this isn't about sudat bar mitzvah, this is really about the bracha of baruch shepetrani, but when it comes to the bracha of baruch shepetrani, there are some who argue that the reason that a boy has it in the particular location where we do that bracha is because we want to make the bracha somewhere where it's very publicly clear that the boy has become, you know, a bar mitzvah boy. Right, so we specifically choose moments in which the bar mitzvah boy has done something public. That's why it's often, you know, when the boy gets an aliyah, because that's kind of like the most general place where every single 13-year-old boy is able to have the same place. And it's a very public forum because, you know, it's in front of a minyan, there's a lot of people. That's why it's done there, even though in theory the bracha could really be done, you know, the day that the boy, you know, turns bar mitzvah, or the day that the boy does his first mitzvah in private, you know, he says kiddush or I don't know, whatever it is. He counts for us, what? Puts on his tefillin, yeah. Puts on his tefillin at home, you know, whatever it is. That could have been the first time. So we make the bracha, you know, in the more public setting. And so this might be partly Rav Moshe's source. I mentioned as an aside that not everyone agrees to this. I mean, most people do not agree with this distinction. They don't think this is a valid argument in terms of, you know, public versus private. I'm also not totally sure that sociologically it's so true. Is it really true that bat mitzvah girls, there's no difference between before and afterwards? I've been to so many bat mitzvahs, to be fair. But the ones I have been to, most times the bat mitzvah girl tends to do something religiously significant that is often tied to an actual mitzvah that they could not have done beforehand. I was at a bat mitzvah not too long ago where a bat mitzvah girl did a hafrashat challah, where she separated, you know, she made a lot of dough to make bread, and she separated challah. And she did it on behalf of this really big challah, this really big piece of dough, that otherwise, if she had not been a bat mitzvah girl, then someone else would have to have done it. So there was a mitzvah done, and it, you know, it's not a public setting the way that a minyan is, But it clearly was, like, in front of a lot of people, in front of her whole family, in front of her friends. So there, you know, we still do some stuff. I'm not sure that, you know, her motion argument is the strongest argument to be made. But let's get, yeah. Right, so I think her Moshe's argument, when it comes to like, we actually saw it earlier about like siyums for like, you know, for pidyon for tanit bechorot, or you know, a siyum for before in the 9 days. I think her Moshe's argument there is that it's a suda relating to finishing Torah. So there, it's a very different type of nature of a suda. It's very different from this. Here, Moshe's talking about specifically a case where there actually is no Torah shared. And the only thing that you're celebrating in this Sudat Mitzvah is the fact that the child has now become Gil Mitzvot, has reached the age where now obligated in Mitzvot. That's all our Moshe is talking about. And that's the context in which he's arguing that there's been, that you're going to differentiate between public and private. In terms of sharing Torah, I think our Moshe's argument probably is that sharing Torah is almost quite definitionally public. I agree, it's not the strongest, you know, distinction here, but I guess that's kind of our Moshe's argument here. So here's the thing. Technically, I mean, I don't want to get into a whole discussion about women's chiv and Talmud Torah, but technically women do not have a chiv and Talmud Torah. Why they make the bracha, is a whole discussion of itself. The bracha of Birkas HaTorah is not necessarily a Birkas HaMitzvah. It might be a Birkas HaShevach VeOdah. There's a lot of discussion to be had about it. How many brachas is it? It might depend on how many brachas is it. There's a lot to talk about Birkas HaTorah. Is it really a Birkas HaMitzvah at all? There's a lot to talk about. Why women will say, even if it is a Birkas HaMitzvah, we have a general principle, at least for Ashkenazim, that women still make brachot, even if they're pater in a mitzvah, right? So women who, you know, benches on lulav will still make a bracha for Ashkenazim, even if they're pater in lulav. I don't want to get into a whole discussion about women's chiyuv and Talmud Torah. I'm all pro women learning Torah. If it's not clear, I mean, it's not clear for my own wife. I'm all pro, and I'm pro women having bat mitzvahs. In terms of just like defending Rav Moshe, technically women are not chayvim Talmud Torah. I'm still in shock. There still is value in women giving a shir. I'm shocked that Rav Moshe makes that comment, that aside about there's no value to her giving a drasha. I'm not even sure what to do with that. At the very least, if Torah is Torah, regardless of, you know, the chayim. Yeah, I'm sure there's a sociological part to it. I'm sure there is, but it's still. Right, but that's because of the shul setting. I don't think it's because of the Torah setting inherently. I'd be surprised that if there was some like a real like Talmid Chacham would actually like, you know, not learn Torah from a woman who said like a Dvar Torah in like, you know, at home at like a, you know, a Shabbos meal Dvar Torah. I'd just be.
When Aviva Zornberg was there a couple of times back in the old building, she insisted on not speaking from the Bima, that she only would speak in the ballroom.
Yeah, that's probably a question of like using of the shul yeah, that's probably just her personal feeling about those issues. But So let's go back though to the main issue, which is why at the end of the day, you know, are bat mitzvahs, or is there motion of contention that bat mitzvahs are bad or should be prohibited or should be strongly discouraged as opposed to bar mitzvahs? Because there's a few different things happening here, right? There's a few different reasons they're all worth mentioning. I think there's on the one hand, we saw in the first tshuva, we saw that he mentions first this concept of bar mitzvahs and bar mitzvahs equally being just big parties. Which I don't know if the I'm not sure the sociological facts have changed. I'm not sure how much they have changed. It's certainly true that there are big parties nowadays, but it's also true that there is some Torah there. I think any responsible rabbi or community leaders strongly encourage that there be more Torah and more, you know, mitzvot involved. I'm going to mute everyone just because you're getting some background here. Okay, thanks. So I'm not sure entirely how much the sociological facts have changed, but certainly one of the main contentions of Moshe feels he just doesn't think bar and bat mitzvah, either of them have any reason for it. And he seems to argue that bar mitzvahs, you know, already exist. There's more of a precedent. Seems like he's just acknowledging this already existing custom. And as I mentioned earlier, and I'm not sure this is such a weak argument in Rav Moshe, it could be that he really thinks that bar mitzvahs should have been gotten rid of also. He just acknowledges he doesn't have the wherewithal or the clout to get rid of bar mitzvahs. But maybe really there is no difference. And he doesn't mention that here. He's trying to kind of justify his argumentation. But at the end of the day, maybe he really believes that bar mitzvahs are just as bad and should be gotten rid of. I think that's worthwhile putting on the table. It's also worth mentioning, though, that he does have this one-liner in that first tshuva we saw, which we kind of skipped, that he makes the comment that the source for bat mitzvahs, shemekor ba, meham reformer, veha conservative. That the source for bat mitzvahs comes from the reform movement and the conservative movement. And it's very hard to know how much of that fear, of the slippery slope, of the pernicious influences of the conservative and the reform movement and what they may lead to, and, you know, all sorts of, you know, those type of issues, how much is that driving Rav Moshe's, you know, gut reaction to prohibit bat mitzvahs? Or how much is it just like one more thing that add on to the pile of lists that Rav Moshe otherwise doesn't like bat mitzvahs? You know, if it wasn't for the reform and conservative movement, it was just like an Orthodox movement, you know, started off in, you know, let's say the first bat mitzvah was in Williamsburg, you know, I don't know how much Rav Moshe would prohibit it. Maybe he still would. Maybe he thinks, you know, it's still not much more than a glorified birthday party. But it's hard to know. So I think it's, you know, it's the type of tshuva where, you know, Rav Moshe gives a lot of different reasons. It's one of those things, I don't remember who said this. It was a very good quote. I'm trying to remember where it's from. But, you know, any type of tshuva or, you know, any type of argumentation where you give a million reasons for why something is prohibited, it means probably that not a single one of the reasons is a particularly good reason. You kind of have to keep justifying it because, you know, you don't have any good thing to say. So you're kind of just like adding on a bunch of, you know, zero reasons that, you know, try to make yourself like to prop up a weak argument. At the end of the day, Rav Moshe, you know, certainly, I don't know history in the 60s. I don't think they were so common. I think certainly we know that, you know, in the decades since, bat mitzvahs have become a lot more popular. But the reason I share this tshuva is because at the end of the day, I think that though we don't necessarily paskin like Rav Moshe, I think that his concern about the value of bat mitzvahs and bar mitzvahs equally is still something worth noting. I think in our modern context, it's still worth thinking about, you know, how much of bar and bat mitzvahs, how much are they actually contributing towards Torah, towards Judaism, and how much are they just glorified birthday parties? How much are they just really in excess of wealth? There's often a big problem that nowadays bar and bat mitzvahs are extremely expensive for no good reason. We have like a real tendency to spend a ton of money on this, which is effectively just like a big kiddush, a big party, and it doesn't really connect to Torah. It's something definitely worth thinking about, even if we know we want to encourage our daughters to learn Torah, to celebrate Judaism. But it's still worth thinking about both for the boys and for the girls, the general issue of, you know, not having a birthday party and having a Torah celebration. Interesting. I honestly, I'm not a, I'm not, even, I'm not. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I have to think about that. Yes. Definitely true that Rivadia's troopers are very long, and they're hard to read because they're just so long. So it is true that definitely more people would probably read Rivadia's troopers if they were a bit shorter. But interesting. Alright, thank you for that. Yeah, I mean, the Tom Latora question is like a whole minefield in itself. It's a long debate. You know, you can defend women's claim in Tom Latora. I'm not saying they're not obligated in Tom Latora, but on a purely technical level, if you want to make the argument, you definitely could make the argument that they're a putter entirely. There's no obligation in Tom Latora. So there's a lot to talk about it. What the bracha is for, a lot to talk about that. Yeah, Micah, yeah. Yeah, it's actually, in terms of the bracha itself, there's a few different reasons why you make the bracha for boys, but at least for some of the reasons, it's like not entirely clear why. There are two main reasons for why you make the bracha Baruch Shem Petrani. One reason is because until now, the father has been chayev in the chinuch of his son. And then you've been obligated to teach your child. Why you're not obligated afterwards, the whole question of itself, but you're obligated to teach your child. And so the father is making some sort of comment that thank you God that I'm now punter from having to teach my child. That's one explanation. The second explanation is because until now all of this is the more common explanation. Until now all of the averot that the child does, you know, fall upon the father. And so now after the child becomes, you know, bar mitzvah, now that all those averot fall on the child, and so the father is saying thank you that I'm, you know, longer responsible for his sins. Not the nicest thing to talk about, but that's the reason. So if it's about chinuch, according to the first reason, so some people argue that men are not obligated to teach their daughters. There's no mitzvah of chinuch for women. There's a whole discussion about if there's such a whether it's a chinuch for chinuch for daughters. It's a long discussion. But if you contend the answer is no, then that would explain why there's no bracha. But if you take the more common, famous explanation, then you're right. Then you really there should be a bracha, Baruch Shem Petrani. Actually, Rav Moshe quoted the Pri Megadim in his tshuva, who asked that question and leaves it as a tzarich iyun. So the Pri Megadim says, yeah, Ein Hachanami really should make brachos for women also. There's no reason we don't. It's an interesting sociological fact why we still don't. We want to talk about. But yeah, it's a good point. Why don't we? Not clear. So yeah, absolutely. Interesting. I've never heard that. I mean, I'm it could definitely be true, but. Cool. I have to look that up. It sounds interesting. I presume those would have been in secrets.
That was the agent.
Yeah, interesting. I'd have to look it up. It's really interesting. All right, so no other comments just before everyone leaves. Just next week, there is a Matan event, which I encourage everyone to attend. It should be really interesting. Really great speakers coming. At 10 o'clock, there's going to be a brunch here, even if you want to eat here as well, at Lincoln Square. So it's going to be at 10 o'clock. I'm thinking we're going to have this year, we're just going to have it shorter, so a half hour. And I think I might do something special for Yom HaShoah, for the Holocaust. We'll do some type of like short tshuva about the Holocaust. So we'll be here. I'll just be a bit shorter next week, 9:15. I'll see you all then. Have a great week. Thank you for joining.
Thank you.